May it please the court, Bernard Fishman, Houston, Texas, for the petitioners Charles McLaughlin and Charles Franklin. This is an appeal from a temporary injunction of the petitioners from statutory immunity of political detainer in the Justice Court in Harris County, Texas. The facts briefly are that the petitioners, as lessors of a commercial lease space in an area called The Village in Houston, leased a building to, or leased a portion of the building to the respondent, in which he operates a home improvement center and hardware store. The disputes arose between the parties, and in August 1982, the petitioners instituted a suit in the Justice Court to evict the respondent. That case was never tried. It is in the record that the case was, the citation was served, but the case was never tried. In approximately January 1983, the petitioner instituted suit in the District Court in Harris County, Texas, for a declaratory judgment on matters pertaining to the lease, claiming matters of harassment, damages, intimidation, threats to his business, and so forth, and also prayed for an injunction to restrain and enjoin the petitioners from prosecuting their statutory remedy.
Houston County, you said it was filed, never been tried. It's still pending?
Yes, sir, it is.
All right.
Still pending, and as we will point out in the discussion of some of the cases, there are a number of cases at which the proceedings in the Justice Court were at different stages. In some instances, the cases that we've cited were cases that had just been filed, as is the case here, and not tried. In others, it had been tried in the Justice Court. In others, it had been appealed to the county court at law and was pending judgment, or in some cases, the writ had actually issued for restitution of the premises. The Supreme Court has ruled in the Hajek case that it no longer has jurisdiction under Subdivision 6 of Article 1728 to hear appeals in temporary injunction matters, and therefore we are before the court today under Subdivision 2, which is a conflict.
It was really not Subdivision 6, it was Article 4662 that gave us jurisdiction. It was a special article.
That's correct, Your Honor. The Hajek case, which I don't believe is referred to in our brief, which is a 1983 decision of this court, held that the revision to Article 4662 effectively deprived the court of jurisdiction. But nevertheless, the court in the Hajek case ruled that you do have jurisdiction under Subdivision 2, conflicts of decision, in the decision of the Court of Appeals, as opposed to other decisions of the Courts of Appeals, or formerly Courts of Civil Appeals, and the Supreme Court. We predicated our application for writ of error on a conflict of the decision of the 14th Court of Appeals in this case with a prior decision of the 1st Court of Appeals in the case entitled Haith versus Drake, and which is a no-writ case, and also on a Supreme Court case from 1935, which is the Holcomb versus Loreno case. I might point out to the court that there is at least one other, though it was quite a number of cases that are that come down on both sides of this issue. And as a predicate to my some of the additional argument I'll make, I believe we can probably show the court that all of the cases that come down on the opposing side, that is, that the district judge does have that authority to enjoin the prosecution of the statutory remedy of forcible detainer, are all no-writ cases, whereas those cases which support our position before the court are in some instances refused NRE, in one instance an error refused case, in another instance dismissed for want of merit. And some of those cases are cited in the brief. I would like to call to the court's attention one case which should very clearly have been part of the predicate for the application for writ of error, and I regret to say I did not cite in this application, and that is the case of Bexar County versus Stewart, which is found at 41 Southwest 2nd, 85, That is a San Antonio Court of Civil Appeals case, which holds for the position of the petitioners and was error refused. So I think it is probably a stronger predicate than even the Haith versus Drake case, which is a no writ case.
What's the cite on that again, Mr. Fishman?
It is 41 Southwest 2nd at page 85, Your Honor, and that is a 1931 case in which the error was refused, and it simply holds that an injunction restraining prosecution of the statutory remedy is improper because the parties have their remedy at law, which is to raise such defenses as they have in the justice court or on trial de novo before the Court of Appeals. The authority for this holding, in effect, is that the statute which authorizes forcible detainer, which is Articles 3973 et sec, which have now been to some extent displaced by the rules of civil procedure, but the statutory authority and the scheme provided by the legislature is to the effect that this remedy may be prosecuted concurrently with the case in the district court so long as the justice of the peace does not attempt, or by extension the county court at law judge, does not attempt to litigate the issue of title. Now, we say in the fact statement in our brief that the facts necessary for a resolution of this case were stipulated at the trial of the temporary injunction. And in the plaintiff's original petition, it was alleged that this is a landlord-tenant case. In their very first substantive paragraph, they cite the lease. These are in the transcript and are referred to in the brief by page and line. They attach a copy of the lease, and they say that the defendants, which would be the petitioners before this court, have filed the suit in the forcible detainer in the justice court and have attempted to have the respondent removed. There is never a question of title involved in this lawsuit. Never any issue made on title either in the justice court proceedings, which were aborted, or before the district court. We believe that the case law is clear that where there is no action on the title, the parties may, the landlord may prosecute his remedy before the justice court, while at the, and thereby have this summary, simple, speedy remedy for possession and possession only. The statute does not attempt to deprive the district court of its authority to hear the matter of possession should the party so choose. But by the same token, the district judge has no authority to enjoin the prosecution of that remedy as long as there is no action made on the title before the justice court or issues made in that court on that subject. In the Bexar County case, the language struck me as being particularly appropriate to the situation that we have here. And if I might ask the court to indulge me, I'd like to read just a little bit of this language. The writ of injunction would become a destructive force if it be used to deprive courts of their legal authority and jurisdiction and lose its distinctive trait of a remedial writ issued only to meet emergencies and to grant relief from wrong and oppression. The law provides the machinery for enforcing rights and preventing wrongs, and this is the source of the fact that we have an adequate remedy at law in this case, and that is to go into the justice court. And as I say, the facts were stipulated that there was no action on the title before the district court. Nevertheless, the district judge entered the injunction, and though he made no separate findings of fact and conclusions of law, they are stated, some findings are stated in the order granting the temporary injunction. Among the items that are listed are things such as preventing the multiplicity of suits, that there would be irreparable harm if the respondent were evicted, that this is necessary to prevent this egregious wrong, but nowhere does it say anything that the petitioners, as the plaintiffs in the justice court, were attempting to do anything more than exercise their rights provided by the statute. The Court of Appeals, in affirming this decision of the district judge, found that there had been no abuse of discretion by the district judge in granting the injunction. We submit that there was clearly an abuse of discretion because the district judge had no authority to enter the order which he did. Now, some of the cases that we've cited in the brief and some of the additional cases that I would cite to the court today discuss the question of the district judge's authority in terms of that word, authority, and others discuss it in terms of jurisdiction. I will confess to the court that after reading the several opinions, I'm not sure if those terms are different or if they're synonymous. But the effect comes out the same. It says that you can't do that. You can't stop them from prosecuting their remedy in the justice court. And I think it makes sense when you think about it, because the legislature has provided this scheme or method by which parties may have their action for possession without having to go through an action on the title. And in fact, this seems to have been the law as early as 1858, case of Gibson versus Moore, which I did not cite in the brief. That is found at 20 Texas Reports 476. It's an 1858 case. No, excuse me. I'm sorry. That's it. Should be at 611. Pardon me.
Give us the citation again.
Yes, sir. 20 Texas 611. An 1858 case. As early as then, it has been the law in this state that these cases may be prosecuted concurrently. Now, in the Haith versus Drake case, which was one of the cases upon which we predicated our application for writ of error, the facts were, I believe, even more compelling that the injunction should have been granted, and yet the Court of Appeals reversed the district judge. In that particular case, the landlord was in fact selling the property to the tenant on apparently on a contract for sale. And in fact, apparently the payments were current. So it's unclear from the record exactly why the landlord or vendor was refusing to honor his contract, but he did act to file the suit in the justice court. He was enjoined, and the Court of Appeals reversed. In this case, the Court of Appeals misreads the effect of the Haith versus Drake case. They seem to think that if the sole issue before the district court is the matter of possession, then the district court has no authority to enjoin the prosecution of the remedy concurrently in the justice court. Now, I would submit that that's not what Haith says. It's not what any of the other cases say. And I think what you have to read is that when the sole issue before the justice court is the matter of possession, then the district court has no authority to enjoin concurrent prosecution of the remedy. Under their reading of the case, and I think this is the most important part to which this court has to address itself, if the decision in this case would stand, then anytime the landlord would file his action in the justice court, the tenant is going to file in district court and allege something that will get him around the problem that the only issue is possession. He'll allege harassment, he'll allege breach of the lease, he'll allege something. But counsel will not lack for ingenuity to come up with something that will get them within the rule, in this case, as stated by the Court of Appeals, if it be correct.
Let me ask you about this case. Clybert sued your client. One, tortious interference with business.
Yes, sir.
Two, what deceptive trade practice violation? What was the basis of that?
The deceptive trade practice
mm-hmm.
violation? Candidly, Justice Kilgarland, I don't know.
All right. And third, breach of contract.
Yes, sir. And also additionally, harassment, threats of intimidation. I've got the petition here. I mean, it's rather lengthy, and there's quite a number of things alleged.
And you're simply saying that based on that suit, that the district court had no right to enter a temporary injunction in respect to possession?
With respect solely to possession. The district judge could enter any kind of injunction. I don't claim that he didn't have jurisdiction over the subject matter or the parties insofar as there were issues made, deceptive trade practice, whatever. But I do suggest to the court that he had no authority, no jurisdiction, depending on which of the cases you read, to enjoin this one item, and it is solely this that we are before the court, is on the issue of possession.
Your answer then, as I take it, is that the exclusive jurisdiction for the determination of possession is in the Justice of the Peace Court.
No, Your Honor, I do not claim that at all. I would suggest to the court that it may be prosecuted concurrently. That is the clear import of all of the cases.
Well, what you're saying is that once the Fourth Amendment detainer suit has been filed, then the exclusive jurisdiction is in the Justice Court.
No, I'm not suggesting that either. That would be the facts of our case. In fact, you know, one of the grounds of granting the injunction was to avoid a multiplicity of suits. Well, if anything, we started first. Our case was filed prior to the district court suit. So certainly the multiplicity of suits arose when the respondent filed his action to enjoin.
Well, aren't you saying that the district court doesn't have authority or jurisdiction to stop your first amendment detainer?
That's it. That's all that we're saying. It is limited strictly to that. If the district court action had been commenced before our suit in forcible detainer, the result, I would submit, is exactly the same, and that is that he could be suing for all of these claimed wrongs. He could be suing for his declaratory judgment on the terms of the lease. Any of those things can be done. But if after that suit were commenced, the petitioners, as plaintiffs in the justice court, filed, then commenced their suit, I would suggest the result is precisely the same. The district
counsel,
judge...
you're not coming through to me. There are many kinds of lawsuits you can file in the district court. Can you file a forcible entry and detainer suit in the district court?
I don't believe so.
Thank you.
I don't believe that at all. That is a statutory form of action that must be commenced in the justice court and then by extension to the Court of Appeals.
Is there any other jurisdiction in all of the Texas jurisprudence in which you can file a forcible entry and detainer suit except in the Justice of the Peace Court?
No, sir. But I would qualify that by saying I must be candid with the court. I think that you can have an action for the possession in the district court. The district court has general jurisdiction, and I'm simply saying that that jurisdiction is concurrent.
For example, trespass type title can include the county.
Exactly, exactly. And that's why the cases say, for example, in Holcomb versus Lorino, it says this is a summary, expedient, simple, inexpensive remedy as opposed to an action on the title. In other words, we could bring our action on the title in the district court and that make that our action for possession. That's not what we choose to do. At least I perceive the cases to say that, because it says the remedy can be prosecuted concurrently. The statutory form of action that has been decreed by the legislature must be commenced in the Justice of the Peace Court.
Are you saying that if the issue of title is being litigated in district court, then the district court has the right to determine temporary possession pending a litigation of title?
I believe that's correct.
All right,
but I believe there are decisions that would even suggest that that's not the case.
But is there any exception to the rule? If title is not an issue, is there anything else that would confer the right upon the district court to effect possession?
None whatsoever. None whatsoever. And that is a clear holding of Holcomb versus Loreno. In that case, the tenant was the, and he was the respondent before the Supreme Court, and had obtained the injunction. In fact, the district judge had denied it on precisely the grounds that we contend here. The Court of Appeals reversed and granted the injunction, or directed that it be entered. And then that was brought up by the City of Houston as the petitioner landlord. They were operating something called a city market, which I presume doesn't exist anymore. The city market was the landlord to Mr. Loreno, who was operating a fish market of some sort and had just as in this case expended substantial sums of money for improvement to his stall that he was renting. If he had been evicted, he would lose the value of those improvements, just as the respondent in this case would lose, and also he would lose his business because it would obviously destroy his business to be evicted. He'd have to go somewhere else and start up again. That could be detrimental to his business. Whether it would destroy it or not, I don't know. That's not the point. One can say there may be irreparable harm here, there may not be. But what the Supreme Court held in that case was it doesn't matter. There is no authority. I think in Holcomb it's couched in terms of jurisdiction. In some of the other cases, as I say, the term is authority to enjoin. One of the cases that discusses it in terms of authority to enjoin is Home Savings Association versus Ramirez, which I believe is cited in the brief. It's at 600 Southwest 2nd, page 911. And that was a case in which this honorable court refused the writ of error. The court there said that by issuing the injunction, prohibiting the execution of the writ of restitution, the trial court abused its discretion by changing the status quo and also expressed it in terms of exceeding its authority. In Hartzog versus Seeger Coal Company, which I believe is cited in the brief, it's at 163 Southwest 1055. This is a no writ case. In that action, the justice court proceeding was filed, and then the injunction suit was filed the same day to restrain its prosecution. The court there discussed at some considerable length some of the very same matters apparently that are involved in this case: allegations of conspiracy, fraudulent transfer of the title to invoke a provision of the lease that would permit the landlord to terminate the lease. The court says it seems to be very well settled by the decisions of this state that the defendant in an action of forcible detainer may prove any facts not inconsistent with the title under which he went into possession of the property, which show that his right still to occupy the same existed at the time the suit was brought, although these facts may be connected with the title to the property. While the district court is an appropriate tribunal for the trial of the mere rights to the possession of the land, its jurisdiction in this respect is merely concurrent with that of the justice court to try such right and not exclusive. The two remedies not being inconsistent may be employed concurrently, though a satisfaction of one would be a satisfaction of all. And respectfully, Mr. Chief Justice, I think that quotation is the source of my thought that there can be an action in effect in the district court for possession, but that it is not exclusive of the rights of the landlord to bring his action in the justice court and prosecute the same concurrently. And I think that's a correct statement of the law. And I think it has been held over and over again that this is the law in this state. The Holcomb case, Bexar County versus Stewart, numerous other cases hold this, and they are cases that have been ruled upon by this court, either expressly or by refusing the writ of error application with the designation NRE, want of merit, and in the case of Bexar County versus Stewart, error refused. All of the cases cited by the respondent deal with this case without the ruling having been tested by this court. And I think those decisions are in conflict with this court. And I would suggest to the court that if we are found to be correct in this matter, that it would be an appropriate time for the court to lay to rest those decisions that are in conflict and to overrule them to the extent they are conflicting with this court's prior rulings. Again, I would say to the court that the petitioners have been deprived of a statutory remedy to which they are entitled under the law. A summary, speedy, expeditious, and inexpensive remedy. They were improperly enjoined, and they ought to be permitted to go forward in the justice court and bring that issue of possession to a conclusion. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please this honorable court. My name is John Caselli. I'm with the law firm of Carley and Fisher in Houston. We represent Leroy Clybert, doing business as Southampton Home Improvement Center. He is, as you know, the plaintiff in the trial court. He was the appellee on appeal to the Court of Appeals, and he's the respondent in the Supreme Court. For the purpose of my argument, I'm going to refer to Mr. Clybert as the plaintiff, and the two defendants, the two petitioners, McLaughlin and Franklin, together as the defendants, unless otherwise appropriate. The defendants have alleged this honorable court has jurisdiction under Subdivision 2 of Article 1778 by asserting that the 14th Court of Appeals decision in this case is in conflict with the cases of Holcomb versus Loreno and Haight versus Drake. I believe the defendants are incorrect in the statement that this court has jurisdiction under Article 1728 and therefore is not properly invoked the jurisdiction of this court. This court has held it will not simply assume jurisdiction, but that jurisdiction must be properly invoked. And even if there is shown to be a conflict of decisions in cases and the conflicting decision of the Court of Appeals can be sustained for any non-conflicting reasons, then the jurisdiction of this court is not invoked and does not properly vest. In the case of Barr, the defendants are unable to show, and I'm going to describe this to the court, why that there's any conflict of the decisions or material factual similarity in the case at Barr and the alleged conflicting cases. The same material facts and law which distinguish these cases for purposes of Supreme Court jurisdiction also distinguish these cases in connection with the validity of the merits of the granting of the injunction in this case. I found it necessary here to go into a little more detail than I did in my brief on reviewing the case in connection with these material issues. Contrary to the statement in the defendant's application to this court, the Court of Appeals in the case at Barr did not hold that the sole issue in the district court was one of possession. The Court of Appeals in this case held that there's not simply an issue of possession of property in this case. The material holdings of the Court of Appeals in this case to the issue of jurisdiction and the merits of this case are these. The district court has jurisdiction to consider the application for injunction and the additional relief sought. And secondly, that the district court's order is not void as a matter of law. And that there's not only no clear abuse of discretion in this case, but there's no abuse of discretion at all where the district court's order is supported by these findings that the district court wrote in its order. That the plaintiff... Yes, Judge Gilligan.
How does your remaining in possession of the premises affect your right to recovery of damages? What's the relationship between the two?
Judge, there is a continuing right to recovery of damages. And there's no question but that Mr. Clybert can continue his case on the merits for damages. Our remaining in possession is not related to that, but only to the extent that there is irreparable harms that can occur, and the law has found this to be the case, where you're dispossessed under this factual situation. Now, this is, I'm not talking about any other factual situation in this case. We're looking at these facts in the equity consideration of this case, and I will get into that and describe what I mean there. Getting back to the findings that the district court made, and why there's not only no clear abuse of discretion, but abuse of discretion at all in this case, the plaintiff, Mr. Kleibert, is seeking in his petition a declaratory relief in connection with material terms of the lease, which need to be construed by the trial court, and which are critically connected to the issue of entitlement to possession in this case. A finding of the issue of possession cannot be determined prior to the trial court's construing those material terms of the lease. This is also stated in the district court's order, and one of the reasons that the Court of Appeals sustained the injunction. Further, the district court made a finding that the injunction is necessary, and I'll get back to this, to avoid a multiplicity of lawsuits. Further made a finding that the injunction was necessary to protect the jurisdiction of the trial court in the orderly administration and the justice of this case under these circumstances, and that a finding, and further a finding, that dispossession of the plaintiff, Mr. Kleibert, under these circumstances of this lease property would result in irreparable harm to Mr. Kleibert. The district court also found and held that there was no adequate remedy at law for the irreparable harm that it found would occur to Mr. Kleibert. It's very important that neither the Holcomb case nor the Haidt case turned on any of these matters, or any of the other cases for that matter, that the defendants are presenting to this court or presented to the Court of Appeals. The defendants have not, by the way, challenged any of the matters that I've just brought to your attention in connection with what's cited in the district court's order, either in the trial court, in the Court of Appeals, or as far as I can tell, to this court. The defendants in their application to the Supreme Court incorrectly state the holdings of Holcomb versus Loreno and Haidt versus Drake when they assert that the courts in those cases held as a matter of law that the district court had no jurisdiction to restrain a trial of forcible entry and detainer in justice court. Nowhere in either the Holcomb case nor the Haidt case can I find that the courts held as a matter of law that the district court is without jurisdiction to restrain the trial of a forcible entry and detainer suit in justice court. The jurisdiction was not a material issue in those cases, and jurisdiction is not a material issue in this case. Even in the event that I missed the point on jurisdiction, and jurisdiction is an issue, I believe it is not. The issue in the Holcomb and Haidt as an issue in the Holcomb and Haidt cases, then the subject cases are still distinguished in the law and the facts, which I'm going to go into. The facts and the law in the Holcomb case are materially distinguishable from the case at bar in these respects. First, the Holcomb case was a case in which the district court denied the application for injunction, and the Court of Appeals reversed and remanded with instructions to the district court to grant that injunction, substantially different from our case. The district court in Holcomb apparently found that there was no cause of action stated by the plaintiff's petition and granted the defendant's general demurra to the plaintiff's petition, denied the application without a trial on the merits of the application. This is very important. There was no showing by the plaintiff that in the Holcomb case that he was entitled to an injunction by proving up the necessary elements and those things which he must prove in order to be entitled to an injunction. The court in Holcomb found that it had carefully considered the allegations contained in the petition of the plaintiff and had construed that in the most favorable light to the plaintiff and still found that there was no cause of action. This finding is material to this Supreme Court's opinion in this case. It is clearly improper for the Court of Civil Appeals to reverse the district court's denial of the application and remand the case to district court with instructions to grant an injunction where there was no evidence taken in the district court on the merits of the injunction. In the case of Barr, the district court did in fact hear evidence, a lot of evidence, on the application and granted the injunction, and the Court of Appeals sustained that order after reviewing the record. Secondly, the Court of Appeals in Holcomb held that the justice court had no jurisdiction over the issue of possession and that the district court had exclusive jurisdiction over the issue of possession. The Supreme Court must have been concerned when it wrote its opinion about the precedent that holding might set. It's clearly an erroneous holding, and the Supreme Court, I think, observed that in making its decision. Neither the district court nor the Court of Appeals in the case at bar has held that the justice court has no jurisdiction or that the district court has exclusive jurisdiction over this issue of possession. Thirdly, the lease in question in Holcomb did not have a term and was terminable at the will of either party. The lease in question in the case of Barr is a 5-year lease, initial term with 2 5-year options, and it is not terminable at the will of either party. Fourthly, the court found in Holcomb that the sole issue in the case was the issue of possession. Again, this is not the single issue in this case, and the Court of Appeals in this case observed that it was not. There's a materially distinguishing fact in law there. This court in Holcomb clearly stated those material factual and legal matters which distinguished the Holcomb case from the case at bar when it wrote that the plaintiff had made no allegations that the city had intended or contemplated resorting to wrongful or unlawful acts, and that the plaintiff had not alleged sufficient facts to show no adequate remedy at law in the case, or that the plaintiff would suffer irreparable harm. And for this reason, the injunction wasn't granted.
Counsel, this temporary injunction was granted about a year and a half ago. Either party tried to try this matter on the merits?
Your Honor,
this matter could have been disposed of and been tried on the merits.
Your Honor,
it's been sometime early part of 83, wasn't it?
It was, Your Honor. Believe it or not, in the time that we've had some things intervene in connection with charges by Mr. Clyburn that the violation had been injuncted, had been breached, and we've had to go back to court on that. Things have been moving in the case. It's unfortunate it's taken as long as it has, but I don't think anyone's been derelict in trying to prosecute the case to conclusion.
Well, counsel, have you ever asked for a setting on the permanent injunction?
I'm sorry.
Has there ever been a request for a setting for a trial on the permanent injunction?
Your Honor, that was to be done at the time of the trial of the merits in this case. There was some more discovery to be done. And to answer your question, no, there has not been a request for a setting on the permanent injunction. Again, Judge, there's a lot to be done in this case. The facts are complicated, and there's been a need for discovery, which has taken some time because of the circumstances in this particular case.
Have either of you gone before Judge Moore and asked him to certify this case for trial under the local rules of Harris County?
No, Your Honor, that hasn't been done yet. Again, the circumstances in this case are such that we haven't been able to do that yet.
Well, what you're really saying then is that one can go down and file a forcible entry suit in which possession alone will be tried, and then that all of those issues, the right to possession, whether one is entitled to the right to possession, can all be tried out. The lease can be understood and explained. Then after that, then that case can be appealed to the county court. But all of that has to come to a stop, because all of that speedy trial is circumvented by going into a district court. And this thing now been pending for all of this period of time, and you say that you're still taking discovery. It looks to me like that this is a device by which you totally frustrate the forcible entry practice, because this is a special lawsuit. But I thought the very object of forcible entry was to go in so you could have a speedy trial on possession only. And then you can litigate all these other things as long as you want. Now, this is bothering me.
Justice Pope, you're absolutely right. The facts in this case, and please understand me, the facts, this all turns on the facts. This is not a simple case, and that's the difference in this case and other cases.
Well, there can be a difficult forcible entry case. Maybe that's the focus of where the difficulty is. But will we frustrate for all time the simple trial of that possession issue?
Your Honor, I don't believe if the conduct of the court below is sustained in this case, if this injunction is sustained, that we are doing what you're saying may be done. We're not frustrating the system to provide for speedy and inexpensive trials in cases where that's appropriate and that's necessary. Our facts do not lend themselves to that.
Tell me the facts that distinguish this from all other kinds of cases.
Judge, there's a need in this case for a declaratory judgment, for one thing. There are
The Justice of the Peace will hear all of that, and he will pass judgment on whether or not he should or should not dispossess. You don't need a declaratory judgment. The lawsuit's already arisen.
Correct.
A declaratory judgment is contemplates there's uncertainty, and to avoid a lawsuit, we need to know what it is. We already got the lawsuit. We don't need the declaratory judgment. Just go ahead and try the case. This bothers me.
I understand how it does, Justice Pope, and again,
I think that this, I think what's bothering me is, here we've got a case that began in the Justice of the Peace Court. Now we've used the time and talent of a district court, a court of appeals, and now the Supreme Court of Texas. And this is frustrating the administration of justice. And it bothers me.
I understand, Judge. We wouldn't be here if this wasn't a very important case. And
all cases are important. Tell me the facts which distinguish this from any other kind of a lawsuit which you go down and discuss whether or not the landlord is entitled to possession or not entitled to possession. The very lease is the issue, and that's the thing that the Justice of the Peace decides. He's going to construe that lease and make an adjudication.
Judge, there are some cases, and this is one of those cases, and I'm going to go into exactly what
tell
you're asking me,
now.
Me to. I'm going to. Again, that's what I'm getting into. There are some facts. In this case, a need
tell
for declaratory
me
judgment.
The facts are. Quit telling me that this is a special case. Tell me the facts that make it special.
The issues and controversy that require the declaratory judgment, as a matter of equity, should not be determined by a justice court. It should be made by a court of record in a case like this. There is the other major point here is the multiplicity of lawsuits. The justice court proceeding was filed 5 months prior to the district court judgment being filed. And the at the time the district court judgment was filed, the justice court proceeding was still pending. But what had intervened in the meantime to cause the plaintiff to go into district court, among other things, was he had received formal notice from the defendants that they were alleging new and different breaches of this lease that had not been alleged and entertained in the pending justice court suit. So what you have is a situation where it's one justice court suit pending and unresolved for 5 months on a certain number of facts, breaches of the lease, and then you receive another letter from, or certified mail notice from the defendants in this case, alleging new breaches in the lease. And Mr. Cliver was able to show the district court that what we were dealing with is another justice court lawsuit on the
counsel,
same...
While you're trying to avoid the multiplicity of lawsuits, we've used up every jurisdiction that Texas can afford. And we've had three trials. District Court, Court of Appeals, and now here. Is that avoiding the multiplicity of lawsuits?
In that sense, Judge, no. But the original multiplicity of lawsuits we were concerned with was the multiplicity of these justice court suits. There's no adequate remedy at law for this kind of thing.
Well, it's this type of a practice that is destroying the administration of justice. We've got a jurisdiction where possession can be tried. Why don't we get on and try it?
Judge, I agree with you. In those simple cases where possession can be tried by a court of no record, the justice court. And I'm submitting to the court this is not the facts in this case.
Well, yeah, what made it different?
I tried,
haven't heard anything yet.
Judge,
it makes it different. Would you tell me what's different about it?
The law is where, and please take a close look at the brief, where there's a need for...
We have read the brief.
Thank you. Where there's a need to declare, where the lease needs a court to declare certain controversies in connection with the lease,
what
that a district
saying,
court should do that.
What you're saying and, is that you can file a declaratory judgment suit in every justice of the, in every eviction suit and have a right to come all the way to the Texas Supreme Court?
No, Your Honor, that's not what I'm saying.
Then once it's declared, then you go back again and try to find out what the damages are if it's really against you.
The Supreme Court, Your Honor? I misunderstand your statement.
All you have to do is declare to our judge.
Your Honor, we're, that's not the reason.
Are you talking about the damages or anything?
Sure. Judge, this lawsuit's for much more than declaratory judgment. That's the beginning of the problem. But it's not just a declaratory judgment that's the problem here. Again,
go back to your statement that you don't have an adequate remedy at law. As I understood, Mr. Fishman, the things that you have filed suit on, every one of those things sounds in law for which there is a monetary reward, isn't are you saying that's not an adequate remedy at law?
That's right, Judge. And I've cited some cases that turn on that. A statutory right to try a forcible entry and detainer case in justice court is not necessarily an adequate remedy at law, where, under the circumstances in the case where equity intervenes in a situation like this, there's a need to have these controversies in the least construed, and there's this multiplicity of lawsuits that...
If you're wrongfully evicted, don't you have a right to recover in damages for that wrongful eviction?
Yes, you do, Jim.
Why do you assume that the JP, that the justice of the peace, is going to do something wrong? He's going to try the lawsuit for you. And you're going to be there making your equity arguments to him. You're going to be right there with the lease. And why do you assume that the justice of the peace is going to decide against you? He may decide with you. I don't know.
We know that. And I'm not presuming he is going to rule against us.
In then fact, you have your adequate remedy right there.
You said you couldn't handle it. That's your position.
My
he's
position.
Not smart enough to handle it, so therefore you want to go to district court
It's a court of no record, and it's not. We're not talking about evicting somebody from an apartment unit because he hadn't paid his rent. We're talking about evicting a man who's got 7,000 square feet of lease space, has had a business in there for the past 5 years, has bought next door to this piece of property an additional 5,000 square feet based on the fact that he had this lease to combine that property with and has developed a very substantial ongoing business. If we're not talking about an apartment unit. If he's put out on the street, sure, he can recover some damages in a district court lawsuit for these things having been wrongfully done, but it would never be adequate under these circumstances.
In every eviction suit, there is the possibility of being put out on the street. Does that make it a special kind of case?
Judge, again, it depends on the merits of the case. Part of the problem with this, and part of the problem as I read the law in the state of Texas, is we've been trying to look at these cases very narrowly as under the article that gives the rule that gives the justice court the right to determine forcible entry and detainment. And we say, the defendants would argue, that right is there, so that court has the right to determine that, and there's nothing that can intervene. There's no set of circumstances, there's no equities that can intervene to interfere with the justice court's rule of statutory authority to try the issue of possession.
Jurisdiction is a matter of investing of power. And equity has nothing to do. There are many instances in which our court, we couldn't go down there and tell that justice of the peace what to do or what not to do. Why? Because he has jurisdiction, not this court. You can't file an eviction suit. Why? We don't have jurisdiction. Equity has nothing to do with jurisdiction.
That's correct, Judge. And Article 4642 gives the district court the authority, and not any other court, at least the justice court in this case, authority to review equity situations and issue injunctions. And I submit that the law in this state is that, and their case is cited, that where the district court reviews a situation like this, and he's not, unless there's an abuse of discretion, in which event it's wrong, the district court, under the law giving the district court equitable powers in a case like this, has the right to determine, does this particular set, sorry, does this case deserve the issuance of an equitable injunction to protect a party in the case presented?
What do you do with the legislative plan? The plan is you file a possession case Justice of the Peace Court, and if you're wronged, you appeal it. You appeal it to the county court. Now you completely sidetracked all of that. You say you're going to go into the district court. Why do you assume that you are going to be abused when you try the case in the justice court, and then there is the appeal to the county court? You may win.
Judge, please don't misunderstand me. We have every confidence that we would win in justice court.
Why don't we get on and try the lawsuit under the statutory procedure?
In connection with the justice court avenue?
Yeah.
Because, Judge, this case, we think, deserves the attention of the district court as to all of the issues.
Well, you said court of record a moment ago. Don't you have the right of appeal from justice to county court? Isn't county court a court of record?
That's true, Judge. It is. At that point in the proceeding.
Isn't it a trial de novo where you come in with your witnesses and begin over?
Yes, it is. It is a trial de novo.
A very short period of time, too.
The fuse on it is very short. And there's, unfortunately, in some cases, there are two ways I think you can go. And we're not trying to sidetrack the legislative intent that some cases can go the justice court route. But this is a situation we think deserves the total attention of the district court. And
why didn't you file your declaratory judgment? If it's a very important and different case, why didn't you just file your original lawsuit in the Court of Appeals? Why do you bother with the district court?
Because, Judge, that's where all of the issues in connection with the case are going to be entertained.
I know, but go on up in the Court of Appeals and try your case. The reason you didn't is because there's no jurisdiction. You can't do it that way.
Judge, we wouldn't have done it that way, and I hope that the way we've handled this case does not indicate to the court that we've tried to make any abuse of the system. We haven't. We've been very earnest about what we've done. We've tried to bring all these matters to the district court for its attention, and we think in this case the district court has jurisdiction and authority to do what it's done. Again, we're dealing with an equity situation. Only the district court has the right, the power in equity to do what's been done, and we're not submitting this be done in every case. Please don't misunderstand me when I say that. That's not the point here. There are many cases in which the justice of the peace has the power, the ability to determine simple, inexpensive issues involving possession to property. And the cases that we have that are authority for our position indicate that where title is involved, and there's not title in this case, but there's a case where the justice court jurisdiction is taken from. And
that's because the statute says jurisdiction is in the district court on title. It's jurisdiction.
Do you have a single case that says because the case is complex, the justice of the peace cannot hear the matter?
No, Judge, it may be a little more than that. The cases turn on where there's a need for a declaratory judgment, where there is a multiplicity of lawsuits, where justice and equity in the case would require, for those reasons, as well as the fact that there may be no adequate remedy at law by trying your case in justice court under the circumstances of the cases cited in my brief, that the district court should, in fact, review the matter, and if it issues an injunction, it's a correct one. There are a number of court cases in this state which hold exactly what I'm saying, and I know you've read my brief, and they're there. If what I'm saying is incorrect, and we think there's even greater equity in this situation than in many of those cases, then all of those cases are wrong. And I think it's too simple to view this situation as one where there is no case in which the determination of the issue of possession should not be taken from the justice court. I think the law is flexible enough to recognize that there are situations which should be determined, the issue of possession and everything else alike that's the subject of the lawsuit in the district court. I think that I don't think the law in the state of Texas is that inflexible. I think there's cases other than title cases which can bring in the powers of injunctive relief in a situation like these before the district court, and I think this is one of those cases.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear a rebuttal from you. Were you through? Were you going to argue?
No, Your Honor.
Counsel, have you requested a trial setting on this matter?
No, Your Honor.
Could this matter have been tried and disposed of, but less time than it took to come all the way up here?
If the court will permit me to go outside the record, I can respond to that question and adequately. We'd like nothing better than to get this case to trial. We've fought like bandits to get discovery done in this case. And Mr. Caselli was not misleading the court when he said that there had to be discovery done. The problem is getting the plaintiff there to take his deposition. It was a major production. That took 6 months to get done. And the point is...
Counsel, if you're having difficulties, look at the rules of procedure with respect to sanctions and invoke them.
No
question. There are ways that you can solve that problem.
Your Honor...
This is a case that needs some sanctions.
The Chief Justice is exactly correct, and in fact, we have a pending motion for those sanctions. For refusal to answer questions. I mean, I don't know how far we're going to go outside the record here, but the first time I noticed him up for a deposition, he claimed he was injured. I mean, we could go on and on about that. The point that is within the record, or the point that applies in this case, and that I think answers the questions that I think the justices have been asking, is anytime you want to file a suit in district court, reasonably ingenious counsel such as Mr. Caselli or anybody else is going to be able to come up with enough things to make a case take a year and a half to get to trial, even when there's an injunction that should give it preference. I'm familiar with those cases, and I'm familiar with a number of cases out of the Dallas Court of Appeals.
Yes, that, I wrote some of them, too.
That, yes, sir. That hold repeatedly. That, you know, this case could have been tried on the merits before the time that we got here.
While we're on that subject, I haven't read the transcript. Does Judge Moore's order on temporary injunctions comply with the law that requires the party who obtained the temporary injunction?
No, it does not.
Request a trial setting at the first possible opportunity?
I don't believe so, Justice O'Brien. I have to look. My recollection is it does not. I have not raised that as a point of error in this case. I have limited my point of error to one. I mean, there's 4 points, but they say basically the same thing, and that was he didn't have authority to do what he did. And I've been trying lawsuits in Harris County long enough to know that even with our new docket system that we've got down there, it still takes a long time to get a district court case to trial. And counsel in Houston are no fools. They're going to take advantage of that. And that's why this case is no different than any other possession case. If my client were Gerald Hines and we were seeking to evict the Shell Oil Company from the Shell building, the results in this case would be absolutely no different. It doesn't matter how big the case is. It doesn't matter how many thousands of square feet or millions of square feet are being leased. It doesn't matter how much money there is. The legislature has prescribed a statutory scheme that's been violated in this case.
Well, counsel, no case is going to get to trial through the certification system or anything else until somebody requests that it be tried, set for trial.
Absolutely.
And neither side has apparently requested this be tried on a permanent injunction. Effective April 1st, the rule has been amended to require the judge who sets a temporary injunction who grants one, then and there to set it for trial on the permanent injunction.
I'm aware of that, Your Honor, and I have no quarrel with that rule. I say to you that it doesn't have any effect on what we're doing here. This court, as the supervisor or administrator of the justice system in this state, has to look obviously at larger concerns than those to which my clients have addressed themselves in this case. All we want to do is get to trial in the JP court and try out the case right there like we were entitled to do.
I will say this. We don't often get cases in this posture. But if this were the route for the trial of the justice of the peace case that was taken even in a small minority of cases, there is something drastically wrong with the judicial system.
Your Honor, I don't know that I can comment on that. Yes, sir. I don't know that it's my place to comment on it. I will say to you that my clients want a trial on the merits in this case. The legislature prescribed the means for them to do that very thing, and they've been deprived of it by an injunction. Now, it took a long time to bring the case up through the Court of Appeals, and yes, it's true that during that time they filed another action in the Court of Appeals for contempt, and that sidetracked us for several months while that was resolved. you know, there's only so much that can be done at one time.
I presume before you can request a case be set for trial, you have to file a certificate saying that discovery has been completed. Is that a requirement?
On a temporary injunction or an injunction matter?
Justice Kilgarland, Justice Robertson, I think under the present trial certification rules that went in effect in Harris County on January 1, 1983, you don't do that anymore. You simply file a trial certification request. And I don't believe there is anything in there that contains the statement that we used to have that you certify all discovery's been completed, all parties have been are in the before the court, all appointments of ad litem have been made, and so on. I don't think you make that certificate anymore. You just you file it, and there's a trial certification hearing at which those matters are then discussed. But you don't make a certificate to that effect. I got sidetracked for a minute. I wanted to discuss briefly the statement made by counsel that the Holcomb case is in apposite to the matter before the court. I strongly disagree with that. Holcomb versus Loreno is the Supreme Court case that we think clearly sets the rule. On page 309 of that opinion, I think several of the things that have been addressed by respondent are pretty clearly resolved. The rule is well settled that the defendant in an action of forcible entry and detainer may prove any facts not inconsistent with the title under which he went into possession of the premises, which show that his right to occupancy existed when suit was brought, although such facts may be connected with the title. If the city has no right under the facts to terminate the lease as contended for, that issue may be determined in detainer proceedings. To test the right of possession of property, the state has adopted a liberal policy by providing cumulative remedies. Under the law, the city has the right to maintain entry and detainer proceedings against Loreno to determine the right of his possession of stall number 14 independently of the suit pending in district court. Therefore, the trial court correctly held that Loreno's application for temporary injunction should be denied, and the Court of Appeals erred in directing the trial court to grant the injunction as it did. Now that, I think, clearly responds to Mr. Caselli's contention that since the district judge initially made a determination that he was not going to grant an injunction, that therefore there was no evidence, he had exercised his discretion. That is just not what Holcomb versus Loreno says. The Supreme Court clearly says that the district judge did the right thing as a matter of law and not as a matter of exercising his discretion or anything else. The case of Young Women's Christian Association versus Hare is also a case that I think is in point to one of the questions that the court asked. This is found at 165 Southwest 2nd, 238. And incidentally, that was a case in which the Court of Appeals, it was the Austin Court of Appeals, after sustaining the district judge's refusal to grant the injunction, granted its motion to permit the appellant to take his case before this court. And that application was, in fact, filed and missed point of merit. In that case, the court held that the law is well settled that the defendant may prove those facts not inconsistent with the title that justify his remaining in possession. That is exactly what we're talking about here when we talk about construing the terms of the lease, as Chief Justice Polk inquired. The court there said this ground of recovery did not involve title. It merely involved a question of breach of contract or lease agreement, which entitled appellant to terminate the lease. The statute, which is Article 3973, confers jurisdiction on the Justice Court and the County Court on Appeal in a forcible detainer suit to determine whether a tenant is holding over and so forth. The language has been construed to mean that if the tenant holds over after his right of possession under a lease has ceased, either by the expiration of the time fixed in the lease or by the termination of the lease and the tenant's right of possession prior to the time fixed, and as a result of a breach of the terms of the lease, the holding over is within the terms of the statute. The case goes on to discuss construction of the validity of the lease, precisely the points which the respondents claim could not be done adequately by the justice in this case. The legislature has prescribed the remedy. They have said that this action on possession can be held in the justice court and that only that issue need be litigated there. There's no evidence before this court that anything else was happening other than exactly what was the statutory scheme. I think the fact that the case has not been tried is adequate testimony to the fact that there is a reason why this case ought to be reversed so that that injunction may be dissolved, and then let this case pend for however long it takes to get their discovery and to get all their actions on the damages under the statute and so forth. But let us litigate possession in the forum that has been provided by the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Of course, we'll take a 10-minute recess. All right.